Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again early this week with Dom. Dom, how are you on to immediately date this podcast? It's Thursday afternoon. This might be the earliest we've ever recorded after a Survivor episode.
Yeah, no guarantees that it's going to go up any earlier, but we're at least making an effort this week. But I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
That would be very funny to just put it out there that we're recording very early and just not post it until Tuesday again. But let's not do that. I am doing very well, Dom. Another, I'm going to say, very exciting episode of Survivor to be diving into today. And just for the record, I want to let you know, Dom, I don't think there's anything we can do about it at this point. Your microphone sounds a little worse than normal. I don't think it's the wrong microphone. I think it's the right microphone. Just sounding a little worse. Hopefully that improves, but just FYI. Just be self-conscious, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I will. Don't worry about that. I know that when I went on the RHAP B&B, which is a very fun experience, for some reason my microphone was adding up, and I sent the normal audio file and just like the screaming from another dimension audio file that seemed to come along with it, and for some reason that was the one that I ended up needing to use. So but the first introduction to me for a lot of people would be just like this garbled yelling with a strong British accent from across the pond, but hopefully it'll turn out okay, and your attempt to make me feel bad about myself will amount to nothing.
I think they're kind of like the How I Met Your Mother hot crazy scale. I think there is some sort of like amazing access, bad microphone scale of like your accent people will still be willing to listen to on like a terrible microphone just because it's as soothing or as posh or whatever as it is, whereas no one would listen to me yell through some laptop mic.
I mean, I listen to you yelling at me every week, and I guess I've become desensitized to it, but I guess that is my British privilege at work right there.
Well, at least it's through a decent enough microphone at this point. But Dom, let's get into it. Let's dive into all of the latest Survivor happenings. And I think, you know, last week you brought up that we never talk about the previously on Survivor anymore. Let's do that, because I thought it was interesting this week. The previously on, I feel like, was the worst Ben has looked all season, was in this week's previously on Survivor. Like, they made him look, the highlight reel of him being set up to look like a big threat that everyone wanted out was much more than we ever got in any of the actual episodes, I felt.
Yeah, and this just comes back to my confusion every single week over how I meant to perceive Ben, because you look at that previously on segment and he's been set up to fail. You know, I came into this episode expecting Ben to get taken down a peg, and actually I semi-reverse non-spoiled myself because I saw this Dalton Ross piece that was going up at the same time as the episode was airing, and it was the opening tagline was something like, who's going to win, Devon, Lauren, or someone else? And I thought, well, okay, if you don't have Ben in there, then that probably means Ben's going home. And Dalton's already seen it and just was so careless that he didn't think to edge it. But as it turned out, that was not the case. Lauren was still in there. So apologies to Dalton for any shade I'm throwing on his character there. but yeah, as it turned out, so Ben gets taken down in the previous season, but then as the episode unfolds, like, he both confirms that impression, but then works against it. So, like, we see Chrissy have this vendetta where she's just out for blood against Ben, and Ben's able to sniff that out and play his idol, and everything's coming up Ben, it looks like. So I'm still not sure. I think he's going down a lot in your estimation, certainly, and probably in mine as well. But I still don't know what I'm meant to think about Ben, even after 12 weeks at this point.
Yeah, well, let's dive in, because there is certainly a lot of Ben to be going through this episode. You know, in a week where a lot of things were going on with Lauren and with Chrissy as well, I do think even though he was not the one eliminated, this was probably like Ben's episode. He was like the star of this episode. Maybe he and Lauren co-stars. Now, let's not take anything away from Queen Lauren. But Ben here, after this last vote out, where he was the double agent during that fittingly double episode, and now JP and Joe are gone, he gets off to what I thought was a really bad start, where he was explaining himself to Chrissy, and she was not really interested. You know, she was asking for, I guess, more than he was willing to give, and it seemed like his reaction was something that she didn't care for too much. And I know this was getting a lot of attention, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about him saying, I'm sorry you can't mother me right now, to Chrissy about when she was just looking for an explanation about the vote.
Yeah, a lot of wincing in tweet form as that was going on my feed on Wednesday night. I don't know what their history is. I wonder if it's the thing where, like, if you're so close to someone and you're working so well with them, and then there's this split that comes up between you, it feels that much more raw and painful, and so you're much angrier at them, and you're more hateful towards them than you would be towards anyone else who you never had a reason to trust in the first place. And I think that's the case with the two of them, because they seemed perfectly well set up at the beginning. And you were saying in episode 3, lock it in, 100%, Ben and Chrissy in the final two. And that might still come true, but we assumed at the time that meant Ben and Chrissy are going to be this amazing power duo who are going to go down like, I don't know, JT and Steven or some of the other duos we've seen in the game and just completely dominate everything. And now it looks like if they end up there together, it might be because either they are two goats who someone else wants to drag to the end, or because they somehow reconcile, but not really, but somehow it lasts for long enough to get them there. It's going to be more complicated than we thought at first.
Yeah.
It really seems like there's no love lost between the two of them at this
stage. It's very weird, and it's such a tough circle to square, because I do think they're still potentially going to be in the end there together. I just don't know how. And incidentally, thinking about, like, oh, you know, an all-time iconic duo like JT and Steven, it would be really funny to talk to someone who just started watching with Samoa and didn't watch, like, when Russell came along and heard about the show or whatever and didn't watch the older seasons, and they're like, JT and Steven, those two clowns? Like, what are you talking about, JT and Steven being this iconic players of Survivor? I guess life comes at you fast, Tom. So to go back to it, I think the Ben and Chrissy relationship is probably the one I'm going to have my eye on the most now going forward, because I still do feel like I'm back to feeling like I got the right side of the bet that I made that you mentioned on episode 3, that both Ben and Chrissy would be in there as finalists together. It just still seems to me like they're at loggerheads, as far as I can tell. Like, that's going to be maybe the most central conflict in the game at this point after they get back from this vote. Or is Ben going to be angry at anyone else more than he's going to be angry at the people who flipped on him more than Chrissy, or what?
Well, this is why I was so confused about why he was going along with Devin's plan, because it seemed like there was no benefit for him and no real benefit for the alliance. It's not like he was taking one for the team. All that happened was he was then in a worse spot where all of this backlash was now directed at him instead of anyone else, which, again, I don't know if I'm giving too much or too little credit to Devin, but if he saw that coming and engineered it that way, then I round of applause for him, because whether or not that's what his plan was, it worked out absolutely perfectly.
Well, and that's something we talked about, is when Ben was being the double agent, whether that was Ben, like that, whether that was a privilege for Ben to be in that spot where he could get info from both sides, or whether it would be in the long run not where he would want to be finding himself, because he's eventually going to have to, like, he is just getting people's hopes up essentially for the next 2 or 3 days, only to totally burn them when Devin and whoever else survives from the other side that, you know, was going against Chrissy and Ryan, they were never promising them anything in the first place. And in the dark, I would feel like at this point, Ben would be at a pretty major disadvantage when it comes to getting jury votes, which is not anything I anticipated saying after episode 12.
And it's even worse for Ben, because he does not handle that kind of conflict gracefully at all. His attitude seems to be, if you go against me, then it's fair game, and whatever happens to you, you had it coming, it's fine to feel that way, but in terms of getting them to vote for you when you put them on the jury, you need to have a little more finesse, I think. And I think we've made our position clear in the past that we don't think that necessarily the winner automatically plays the best game, or that if you lose, that is because it was your fault and you should have been able to win those people over. But I am happy saying, from what we've seen, that if Ben loses, or if he goes out because he wasn't able to get any more traction because his allies are going away, that's going to be his own fault. He's going to have no one else to blame for that.
No, and the same way, honestly, I feel like there's still plenty of chance here for Ben to turn this around and win. And based on how I think he did this week, if that were to come in, I think we may be seeing yet another, and maybe this is a lazy comparison because he was also a Southern guy, but I could see this being another Mike Holloway situation where maybe he does just run the table and somehow get his way there, and then kind of get the hat tip from the jurors who are impressed that the rest of the people were never able to eliminate him, even though they always wanted to. Because I really don't see how Ben is going to be the type of player, at least based on what I've seen so far, to get people back in his good graces and really wanting to be trusting him and working with him again.
If that's the case, who do you think his Carolyn and Will Sims are? Because I think an underrated component to that Mike story is he goes there, he has some friends on the jury who, you know, like Shireen and Jen, it seemed, are always going to want to vote for Mike and Haley as well. I'm not sure the same is true for Ben. I don't know where his natural votes are coming from. So I think he's going to need to go up against people who are actively disliked,
right,
or who no one really has a strong opinion about, but they have a grudging respect for Ben's game, so they give him their votes anyway.
Yeah, and my early projection, at least for the – I don't know which of the Will Sims or Mama C you want to call her, but I would say Chrissy would be the front runner to be one of the candidates of people that Ben could feel good about the jurors not necessarily being too in love with, and maybe I'll get the default vote over her if they're just not happy with any of the candidates. Is anyone else jumping out at you to be in that camp?
I know I've been saying that Ryan is the person of anyone left out there I think is least likely to make it to the end. I do wonder, though, if Chrissy and Ryan as a pair might be the ideal two people to have there along with you. Like, if you're choosing anyone, it might be that we're coming into this final six where the way for anyone left to win the game, even if it's someone like Ashley, who maybe doesn't have as strong a profile yet, is to just hook up with Chrissy and Ryan and go with them, because that's an automatic win.
Yeah. No, I think that does make a lot of sense. Do you feel like that's at all likely, though? Because I guess I'm just still not getting the vibe from... I feel like we'd be seeing a different side of Ryan if he was in there in the finals, especially given that I don't feel like at this point we have a ton of reason to be believing in Chrissy either. So in the timeline when they're both in there together, you'd think at least one of them would look a little better.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that Devin and Ashley actually are going to make it to the end. But this might be that missed opportunity that people look back on and think, okay, if I had just at that turning point, if I had just gone with Chrissy and Ryan, maybe I would have had this clear route to the finals where, based on their seeming unpopularity, I would have had a pretty good shot.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I should obviously... get this out of the way, I think, early to just set up where I was entering this episode. I know people had been in previous weeks talking about what a threat Ben was, but I still thought that this foursome was going to stay tight, and I was, up until seeing it actually fall apart, believing that they would potentially even be all of the final four. Where were you on that entering this week? How did you feel like there was a possibility of one of those four leaving here? Because I really was dead set on it being either Ryan or Chrissy getting voted out by that tight foursome.
No chance of Mike just randomly being booted?
I thought he was the distant third, but I really didn't see the four splitting apart so soon.
Okay, so you thought, I'm guessing if you thought your Chrissy prediction was still coming in, that it would have to be Ryan then?
Correct.
Or is there some other...
And honestly, that informed a lot of what I was saying in last week's podcast, and obviously, like, when I did the power rankings last week with Matt Liguori, Ryan was the bottom of my list, just because I thought he was such a huge front runner to get voted out this week, but obviously that didn't end up coming in. But to go back to it, did you think that there was a possibility that this group would actually fracture here? Like, the reason I thought it was so outside of the realm of possibility here for me was we're at the number seven, which is... certainly a good time to flip if you're going to do it, but just didn't seem like the group that was going to actually have that come in. Like, it didn't seem like any one of those four was going to view the other three as a better opportunity.
Yeah, so you have this tight three-person group of Devin, Lauren, and Ashley, and then Ben as this fourth person who it seemed like if anyone was going to break away, it would be him, but he can't even go over, or so I thought, because of the way that he treated Chrissy and his actions over the past few votes with the double agent stuff. So it seemed like there was no way, even if Ben wanted to, he could make that happen. So they would have to sit together. So yeah, all of this came as a bit of a shock. So I guess maybe like Lauren's extra vote could throw a wrench in things, because if you get Ben out now, then at the final six, Lauren's vote is almost more powerful than an idol for that round. Because if Lauren has the idol, then if it's 3v3, there's still some question of who you're going to play it on. And so if they think Lauren has it, then they vote for someone else. But then maybe like the level two moves to vote for Lauren instead. So you have this guessing game going on. But if Lauren has this extra vote, then that's just 4v3, and that's a shutout. There's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, and actually, let's dive let's just go right into it, because I think we're off to a good start here, Dom. I think to get into like the strategic merits of who ended up doing what, I think in a perfect world, like in an environment where Ben and Chrissy aren't for whatever reason at each other's throats, I thought this was a no-brainer for the Chrissy, Ryan, and Dr. Mike side to, of course, be voting out Lauren, right? Like, isn't this the perfect opportunity to take out the person that that has that extra vote and the idol?
Yeah, I thought even with all of the dodginess surrounding Ben, that's almost an argument for voting out Lauren instead, because now no one trusts Ben. He can't do anything. So at Final Six, you can just slam three votes on Ben, and even if he wants to flip over, what? This ties into a larger conversation that I think is worth having about the season, because I've seen so much criticism that everyone's playing a terrible game and it's just terrible gameplay every single episode. Does that make the season worse, though? Because so often it's... Like, take Redemption Island or One World as an example. Those seasons are examples of terrible play by most people in that alliance, but you can sometimes kind of understand why they felt the need to stick with their group, and then amazing play by one person at the top. And you can admire the game that they're playing, but that doesn't make it interesting necessarily. But a season like this, if everyone is playing badly, or so it seems, then everyone is kind of on an equal playing field, right? And so you see certain people in power one week and then lose power the next week, and you can never predict what's going to happen, because things that seem like they should make sense, that's no guarantee that that's what people are going to do. So I feel like even if you agree that the gameplay is bad, doesn't that make it better in a way? Like, there's no like abstract reason why the gameplay being good should determine whether you enjoy the season or not.
No, I agree. What it comes down to for me is having people out there trying. What I think makes for bad Survivor is people who are more inclined to not want to stir the pot or to not want to act in their own best interest and just kind of go along with whatever's going to get them through the next day. I think whether it's people making good moves or people making bad moves, as long as they're out there really fighting for themselves, the game is always going to be at least interesting. It's not always going to be well played, and frankly, I don't even know if I would want it to always be well played. We wouldn't have a whole lot to talk about if people always knew what they were doing, right?
Yeah, and this goes back to what we were saying about the people being more important than the game itself, because the game, like, if everyone is just playing solid ABC Survivor, then that's pretty dull, right? We've seen all the permutations of how that can play out. But if people are making these blunders that you wouldn't even think they could make just because of they're sleep deprived, and then some, like, you see two people scurrying off and you get paranoid, and then you misevaluate what happens if someone plays an idol, and all of these things come together, that creates these really exciting moments that you can't predict in advance. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think a lot of some people, at least maybe, just aren't enjoying this season overall as much. And that is impacting how they're viewing the way people are playing the game. Like, I would say the people who are saying, oh, you know, all of this bad gameplay is uninteresting, I think that may be more of a reflection on the season than the concept of what makes for an interesting style for a season of Survivor to go down in. Because I would say this most recent season of Australian Survivor, I know, has been getting a lot of praise, and with good reason. And there were just blunders all over the place on that show. But I think there wasn't virtually anyone that I can remember saying, oh, all these bad plays are making this so uninteresting. It was just that the season overall was so good that people weren't complaining, whereas I think this one, because of how honestly just kind of boring some of the early votes were, that is influencing how people are viewing just the game overall.
Yeah, it seems like there are people who aren't enjoying the season, which is, they're right, and I can understand where they're coming from, and who also think the gameplay is bad, and in their minds the two things are getting conflated together, so now there's like this causal link there where there really shouldn't be. And yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying the season personally, and I guess if you're, let's say you're rooting really hard for Lauren, as we all were, I'm sure, then seeing Lauren give the idol to Mike for no reason, like that, you're going to get frustrated by that. You're going to want to reach through the screen and like talk some sense into her. But I don't see why that should make the season itself uninteresting. Like, it's,
right.
To me, is that's a matter of personal taste. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, then you don't. And the fact that, oh, someone didn't make the game theory optimal move this episode, that doesn't really enter the equation at all.
Yeah. Although it is, on one hand, like, I do understand that there is like some level of frustration. Like, as I guess we talked about a little bit already, to go back to it, like, This, I would argue, is about as good as Chrissy, Ryan, and Dr. Mike could have possibly drawn up for things to go, where Ben puts a major target on his head, has an idol, and takes out someone from his own alliance, and now Dom, like you laid out, is such a juicy target now here at Final Six. If they can just get Ben out or have him stick with them for one round and take anyone else out, they have majority going forward. And still, we find ourselves here at the end of this episode with everyone putting their votes on Lauren. So I think on like what I will say is I think this was a hugely missed opportunity to take real control of the game, like to have a really rare minority total uprising possibility, especially at a spot like Final Seven, which I think would have been really cool. And we did miss out on that. And like those kind of things I understand, would frustrate people. Like for me, what frustrates me is when making the smart move would have been so much more interesting and instead people just play so conservatively.
My theory is, so we saw this snippet of conversation at Tribal, or excuse me, at Tribal Council between, Ryan and Mike, where Ryan seemed to be saying, we've got to stick to the plan, let's vote for Lauren. And then somehow between then and whenever the vote ended up happening, that transformed into we've got to vote for Ben, and everyone ended up voting for Ben. So I wonder what that was that happened in between. Like maybe they thought we're not going to have the votes, or like if we get this wrong, the vote's still going to come back on us somehow, or if we vote for Ben and he does have an idol, then we're going to tip him off or something. Like I don't know, but I would love to hear the story after everything is said and done of just what happened in however long that conversation took.
Okay, so what I thought was, I had the same thought about that quote, and then I just rewatched the episode. He says, we need to keep the target on Lauren, and I interpreted that to mean we need to make it clear to Ben, we're not voting for you. If we're voting for Lauren, like we need to make it clear to Ben that flipping over to us is still an option here, because obviously if we say that we're voting for him, he's not going to flip anywhere and he's going to vote for one of us. So I think it was not necessarily ever even the plan to actually put their votes on Lauren. I think that was just Ryan saying we need to keep publicly making it clear to Ben that Lauren would be the target if he were to come to our side and not him.
Oh, okay. Because it seemed like that was meant to be a private conversation. That was, with all of this chaos and hubbub that's going on over here, I'm going to whisper in Mike's ear just to check in what the plan is.
Right. And but he says we need to keep the target, not the vote, on Lauren.
Okay, sure.
Which yeah, I think is so a big distinction.
So that leaves me even more confusing, because if that's the case, then why is that your plan in the first place? It's kind of weird as someone who's trying to like analyze this stuff and figure out what the puzzle is, because we just don't know. There's something here that doesn't add up.
Right. You would think that as he's sitting there going, okay, no, we need to pretend that the plan is voting out Lauren. At a certain point, it would cross his mind. Wait, why aren't we voting out Lauren?
Right.
Like, we really should do that.
It's the same thing we were saying about the Devon's alliance with Ben last week. If we're like selling Ben as this double agent and we're telling him he should go over there and vote with them, at some point it should cross his mind that maybe I actually should just go and vote with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually a pretty good call. But and it's the kind of thing too where all of these decisions compound on themselves, because if there's one thing that explains one odd decision and then that odd decision plays into the next vote and then that one plays into the next vote, this one like random thing from 5 weeks ago could be the big part of this puzzle that we're all missing here, and we just kind of have no idea what that is and no hope of even figuring that out until we get the post-game press. So yeah, we might just be in the state of limbo now until we get all of that info.
Okay. Let's back it up. Let's go back to the loved ones challenge, which I guess challenge kind of in air quotes here. I know we've actually always talked about the idea of, you know, we wouldn't be opposed to them just going out there and flipping a coin for immunity. That's more or less what they did this week for the loved ones visit. They just pull rocks out of a bag, and if you match, you stay alive. What'd you think?
Yeah, so a lot of people were calling this the worst challenge of all time. Are you going to come in here with some contrarian take of why actually this was an amazing challenge and everyone who doesn't understand it is just a lower form of life or what?
I would have preferred if it was like, okay, you draw the matching rock, now you eliminate someone from getting to be the winner of this challenge.
Yeah.
That I think would have been slightly better, but I still do like the random chance idea. When it comes to the challenges.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say this is a good challenge. It certainly wasn't even a challenge in any meaningful
way. Okay, so what happened to make this a challenge? Did something fall through, or was this by design?
Something had to fall through, right? Like the theory that I've seen going around is that one of the loved ones either last minute failed some kind of medical clearance for whatever the challenge would have been, and so someone like three positions underneath John Kirchhoffer suddenly was tasked with, like, okay, just grab some string and some just find something, make sure we have a challenge to work with. And I kind of liked it in the sense that, like, they should know that it's just random chance, right? Like, for all of Jeff's attempts to dress this up as, oh, let's see if you're in sync with your loved one, you're just pulling a marble out of a bag. There's nothing to it at all.
I forgot that he did that. That's so funny.
So dumb. So it is completely random chance. But to them, psychologically, it feels like, oh, I messed up, or I drew the wrong marble, and therefore I don't get to see my loved one. So it's a fun case study in how you can create this impression of you messing up or creating this guilt, even though there's just no actual basis for it at all.
Yeah, this is like the new genius deathmatch game, Black and White 4, where you have to match with the other panelists.
This is Black and White tailored for an American audience.
Yes, seriously. This is what, for everyone who wants an American version of the genius, this is what American Black and White would look like. Yeah. All right. So I guess the loved one's highlights. I thought the funniest thing was Lauren's sister, Sunny, who doesn't even run towards Lauren, just like wanders in and goes and hugs Jeff Probst before she goes and hugs Lauren. And Lauren doesn't even seem that excited to see her, if I'm being honest. She's like, all right, well, I guess my sister's here now.
Yeah, it was suitably laconic from Lauren, which I'm guessing is a mashup of Lauren and Iconic. But I was glad that the two of them didn't express any kind of really enthusiasm at all. That's exactly what I would expect from them, and I would be disappointed to see anything more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I talked last week about the possibility of Lauren kind of causing a low-key Chris Moneymaker effect in Survivor casting, where they've, you know, people see this archetype be popular and successful relatively, I guess, now on the show, and want to go out there and do it themselves. And as Lauren was talking about the casting story where her sister was really the one who wanted to be on the show, and she just went with her to the audition and ended up getting on instead, they put up on the screen, I believe for the first time in the history of the show, like, hey, if you want to be a part of this, go to CBSSurvivorCasting.com or something along those lines. I know they talk about it on the reunion a lot, but this I thought was really cool to have them plugging, hey, normal people, this could be you, go do this.
However, it's in direct conflict with what Jeff said on Twitter recently about open calls. He said he called someone out who said, hey, Jeff, check out my video and open calls. And he said, quote, OK, here's a good example. If you want me to go find you from open calls, you don't want it enough. Tough but true. Just turn on your iPhone and send me a clip. 39 days is tough, which I feel like there's some mixed messaging going
right
on.
Yeah, hey, driving 12 hours to Buffalo, New York to hang out at a mall for 4 hours in line, you don't want it enough. Turning on your phone is what it really takes.
not least because he said an iPhone and not a Palm Pre by Sprint, which I'm guessing is what you really should be doing it on. But yeah, hopefully we can clear all that up, and the people who actually want to get on the show can get their voices heard.
Yeah, I mean, Survivor wishes Apple would advertise on it.
Oh, yeah, that would be the actual moneymaker effect.
Yeah. Any other loved ones? Can you settle a dispute? Is Mike's wife named Mary or Barry? I swear they said it both ways on the show. I couldn't distinguish.
Yeah, is Mike married to Mary Berry?
Maybe. I think that's the leading theory at this point. Mary, I actually know who that is. It's the Great British Bake Off, right?
Wow. I'm impressed. Yeah, this is a reversal from every time that you've quizzed me about some kind of pop culture reference.
I've never seen the show, but I've heard nothing but good things about the Great British Bake Off. Are you a fan, even though you hate food?
So here's the thing about Downton Abbey, the Great British Bake Off, James Bond, basically anything that has anything to do with England. Prince Harry is a perfect example. We don't care. We don't have it in our national constitution to care about anything. The rest of you have like this weird fetish for British stuff, this British fetish, and much more capability to actually enjoy things than we do. So the main audience for this stuff is international, okay? It's not domestic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure your monarchy exists at this point just as like a tourist trap.
Yeah, like I don't know anyone who is genuinely excited about the whole royal marriage thing. Despite that, it is going to be plastered across every single major news agency for the next 5 months until they finally tie the knot.
Can I just say, Meghan Markle could have done so much better than Prince Harry. I know that he's like the top 0.00001%. She could have done better. I've been in love with Meghan Markle for 5 years at least.
That's a bold take. Right?
She's fantastic, and she belongs not in England. All right.
I've been wondering recently how were you aware of this scandal a few years ago where Prince Harry went to this Halloween party in this Nazi costume?
I am, yes.
I'm wondering if that happened in the year 2017. You would never hear the end of it. That would be like this permanent damning mark upon his character. And yet people seem to have forgotten about it, presumably because he's handsome and British and incredibly rich. But aside from all of that, you know, you think there would be some lasting memory there.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think a lot of people honestly got away with getting like their big Hollywood infamy out of the way before like this whole wave started rolling in. And for whatever reason, don't seem to get held responsible at all for it now anymore, even as other people are going down for far less extreme infractions, I guess. Not to say that any of it's cool, but I do remember that Prince Harry thing, and it is odd that that no one ever seems to really talk about that. I guess if that happened in the year 2017, he'd develop like a very solid following in America, Dom, for more than just the royal wedding. I don't have any other remarkable loved ones takes other than I did think it was an interesting challenge to watch on TV just as kind of a diversion from the normal obstacle course and swimming and puzzles and so forth. It is fun just to watch them standing there, caring probably more about this reward than any reward they've ever played for. And all they can do is stand into a bag, reach their hand into a bag.
Yeah. And that's why I like the contrast of it, even though if this was actually a challenge that they intended to put out there, I would be raking them over the coals for it. I guess two random things on the loved ones. Firstly, apparently, according to Stephen, the person who bubbles the loved one challenge, who gets voted out before that would come into play, in the past, their loved one gets flown out there and then never gets to take part in that and is just kept with the group. They go to some hotel and then gets flown back again. So it's a very tragic experience for not only the person who gets voted out, but also the loved one who basically wasted their trip out there. According to him, that has now changed. I don't know if that's because he was the last one to experience it and there was this national outcry over Stephen being deprived of that chance to see some guy he knows from back home.
Some guy who wrote a book he likes or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they're actually friends or if this is the equivalent of like Dr. Will really wanting to see Neil Patrick Harris.
Right.
But either way, that apparently is fixed now. So good on Stephen for fixing that, I suppose. And then secondly, I wonder how this actually plays into the perceptions of people within the game. So like Ben currently is in the hot seat. No one really likes or trusts Ben, it seems. But then you see Ben having this incredibly tender moment with his wife, asking if his kids are okay, and they're, everyone is bonding over getting to see their loved ones, and the game is put on hold for a short time. Do you think that does something to humanize that person or to give them a foot in the door in terms of like redeeming themselves and ingratiating themselves back in the group? Or do people understand that, of course, everyone's going to have someone in their life who loves them, hopefully, and that doesn't really say anything about them as a person?
Yeah, we got something along these lines came up a couple weeks ago when we were talking about those loved ones letters, and I think this kind of ties into what we said then about, like, does that ever really change anything in the game, the right group of people getting their loved ones together or their letters together. And we did get a response, and as usual, I no longer remember who it was who tweeted this to me, because it was a few days ago at the time of this recording, but someone pointed out that in Cagayan, when they were very close to getting Jeffra to flip at Final 8 or Final 7 or whatever that was, that was probably like the closest we ever came. But to go back, so I still feel like it's not really that big of a difference maker. And even in this spot with Ben, I feel like given what was going down between Chrissy and Ben earlier in the day, even something as powerful as seeing them with their husband or wife, depending on the case, would not do much to repair that. And I honestly feel like they both, as it came down to the two of them, who were the only ones to survive the first round of rock picking, highly skillful rock picking, I feel like they were both sweating there even harder, and it may have made them dislike each other even more, knowing if I lose this, I'm definitely not getting my loved one. So I don't know how much Ben getting to see his wife did in terms of humanizing him for the other players in the game. However, though, Dom, I do think it did a great deal in what was a pretty up-and-down week for Ben to still give him some sort of silver lining here in an episode where a lot of things did not look overly great for him.
I think he's okay with the final outcome.
Yeah.
We'll work out in the end.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess while we're on challenges, I also wanted to just ask quickly, the immunity challenge where Lauren skillfully picks up the second half of her idol, by the way. But I guess before we get into the challenge, what'd you make of that, of Lauren with this half idol? Because I thought we were going to get another awesome kind of like Kelly Wentworth or Troy Zan kind of moment. But in reality, this shell is just literally right at her feet, and she can pick it up without anyone noticing. And furthermore, when she does pick it up, she doesn't even try to like hide it. She just puts it on her knee for the rest of the challenge.
Right. If I see someone doing that, I'm assuming they just like the shell, and maybe they're taking it as a memento for their kids. I don't know. There's some like completely innocuous reason. I'm not going to think this is part of some two-part advantage idol Frankenstein's monster thing that you have to fit together.
Right. This seemed to me a lot like them trying to play it up like, oh, Jeremy, you can have an idol, but you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to get away from camp at night and follow a torchlit path to get this free necklace. Like, it felt to me like they were just trying to make it seem like it would be exciting, and then there was literally no work involved.
Yeah, for as much as we pretend that Jeremy's was, oh, just follow the flashing neon sign to where the idol is located, he did actually have to, there was some like subterfuge going on. This was
let me be clear. Jeremy's first idol was very legit, finding that in the middle of a challenge. Let me just to clarify, it's the second one that was that they really tried to play up as like, oh, you have to go do this extra task when it's nothing. If anything, it's great cover that he's gone at night. He can't possibly be going for an idol.
Right. This just seems so pointless, unnecessary. I don't know what the intent was here. And that I guess that kind of applies to most of the gameplay decisions as well. Like, it would be more exciting if it was a well-conceived plan that worked, or an ill-conceived plan that didn't work. But when it's somewhere in the middle and you can't figure out what's going on, then there's not really much you can say about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought this was kind of a swing and a miss at trying to make it more exciting. I think they have something really great with hiding idols in challenges. This just is the wrong challenge to, what do you, I guess what I would have wanted to see is, okay, Lauren buried, there's going to be a seashell about 2 feet in front of you and a foot underneath the sand there. You're going to have to dig up the idol, and then you will have an idol. That I would be in for, when she has to do it in front of everyone. But just picking up a seashell is about as innocuous as it can get.
Yeah. So another thing on this challenge, we end up with this weird resolution where it comes down to Devin and Ashley, but it ultimately comes down to them deciding which of the two of them is going to walk home with immunity. And they end up agreeing that Ashley's going to take it. Devin drops out. Ashley wins immunity, which for Devin, do you think this was a case of, I know that I'm absolutely safe, I don't need to worry about anything, and then also this is going to put a target on Ashley so that when it comes down to it, maybe she's going to be seen as more of a threat than I am. Like, if she wins another one and she's won two in a row suddenly, then people are going to start talking.
Right. But the move in that case, right, I think, I don't think it was that, just because the move in that case is not, oh, make it clear like, oh, I could stay up here, but instead we're going to come to this deal. The move in that case is, once all the people you want to make sure don't win the necklace are out, then put on a big show about how sore you are and how comfortable Ashley looks, and oh, I'm never going to win, and drop and give it to Ashley if you truly feel like it doesn't really matter which of you has the necklace, which is another thing that I might argue. But if you really do feel that way, I would certainly be laying it on thick about how I can't go on and how Ashley clearly could be out here all day.
And when Devin is talking in public about how close he and Ashley are, is that something which is already known by the group and he's just informing Jeff and the audience? Or is this really drawing more attention to them than they really should? Because if I'm Ben again, thinking that I might be on the outside of this four, even if I think me and Lauren are this tight pair as well, I know that we're going to have to break up Devin and Ashley at some point. And so if my plan is, oh, I'll just tag along with them and go to the end, or maybe we'll split them up and we'll grab Ashley and take her under our wing, that's going to be a lot harder to do if you know that the two of them are super tight. So I'm struggling to figure out what Devin's motive is.
Right. I guess I am willing to give them enough credit at this point to say that they would not be this overt if it wasn't a known thing. Like, if they weren't essentially this overt back at camp. Although, even with everyone knowing how tight they are, it's not just that people know you're tight. When you are saying it doesn't matter which one of us has the necklace, that also suggests neither of us is ever leaving. Like, we're not only tight with each other, we're tight with our group.
So this challenge has an odd resolution, because it comes down to Devin and Ashley, and the two of them decide between them which of them is going to win. Devin ends up dropping out. Ashley takes it. What do you think Devin's true motive here was? What was this to... he's essentially declaring to the group that the two of us are very tight, and I am so comfortable in my position that I can afford to take this, to sit out of this, even though I was this close to winning immunity and having that be on lock for myself. My first instinct is, if I'm Ben and I'm thinking I'm already kind of unsure of my position in this group, then seeing that and knowing just how tight the two of them are, even if I think that Lauren is still on my side, that's a worry that I have to address sooner rather than later, possibly.
Worry?
Well, a long-term one, but maybe that's something that I have to think about now. And maybe while I have these votes scattered over here who are up for grabs, maybe I can do that now. Like, if I think Devin has an idol or something, or if I think Devin's going to be hard to beat in challenges going long, then... for the same reasons that they decided to turn on Ben, maybe this is a time to make that move now.
Okay, I would still probably feel like if I was going to make a move against that group, and again, at this point, I probably wouldn't feel like doing that if I was Ben. I think this is before he, you know, gets wind that they're coming for him. But if I was, I still feel like Lauren, and in particular, that extra vote would be my big concern, especially at around like final six, where Lauren and two other people is now a majority, even though it's only half of us. That would be probably where I would be going, especially because if I was considering a flip and taking Lauren out first, it would not be, I don't think, too hard to take out one of Devin or Ashley after that. But you are, I guess I wouldn't be as concerned as it sounds like you would be in hearing Devin and Ashley say this. To me, the real concern would just be, from the other people's point of view. I guess if I was Ben, I would be feeling like, oh, look how comfortable they are because they trust me to have the numbers with them.
That's one angle, I suppose. Yeah, this is a classic example of, like, if Devin gets voted out at final six, final five, you look back at this and think, was this the moment of hubris that really drew everyone's attention to him? It's easy to, like, pack that into a narrative. I think Devin knows as well when he does that. If he gets voted out in this episode, he's not gonna look good, right? This is going to be made to seem like Devin is such an idiot for throwing this, which, to be fair, he would be.
We see this more on Big Brother, whether it's, you know, our great friend Jordan Parhar throwing both competitions the round he got eliminated, or, like, Matt Hoffman giving the thumbs up as he gets eliminated from the week, that HOH, where I don't know that in Survivor that kind of extreme really even exists. But if it did, you're right, that Devin doing something like voluntarily stepping down from the immunity challenge when it's down to him and one other person and he could easily still potentially win is probably about as close as it gets.
Yeah. Just quickly as well, we spoke about Lauren successfully managing to piece together that idol. There's also a fake idol circulating around now. Not the one that Chrissy's had since day one, but the one that Ben now fashions out of string and some beads and whatever else he has lying around. And he says that his intention here is to stop the other alliance from going out and looking for the real ones. But he says specifically he hopes that Chrissy finds it and that she plays it and that it all ends in failure for her, which Lauren calls out as an example of Ben's what did Mike call it in the preview? His ferocity. Ben seemed offended at the idea that Chrissy was taking this personally, when it's like, oh, I was only trying to publicly humiliate you and only you, and why are you taking it so personally? You're so emotional. God. Like,
yeah.
It's just like emotional tone deafness that seems to define him, even though he's very good socially. And that's the weird paradox with Ben. It feels like he has the potential to be such a great player, and we've seen that on display for the first half of the season, and then over the past month or so, that's really been slipping more and more.
Yeah, and I mean, to be clear, I think it's still possible that Ben could rebound after this vote, after how everything went down. I do feel like the game is post-merge about as wide open as it's been. So I feel like it's within the realm of possibility for sure that Ben potentially gets people back on his side and has some votes go his way. But I would say that I would characterize his idol kind of shenanigans with the fake idol. I think what he was going for was closer to what David Wright was going for with Jay than how I think Chrissy characterized it, which was Lauren characterized it, which was trying to target Chrissy the same way that they targeted Randy and Gabon, like purely to humiliate him. I really think Ben, at least when he got to describe it, he was talking about how this is going to be a deterrent to keep someone from looking for the actual idol. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So I actually thought that Lauren getting voted out here when she was the one voicing the most criticism towards that actually made Ben look slightly better than if it had been anyone else, just given how it ended up going for her. So I guess let's get into just how all of this goes for Ben, where he walks upon them. He happens upon them up at the water well, and they do, Dom, maybe this is TV magic, it really appears to be like one of the worst cover jobs I've ever seen, about like, oh, this is inconspicuous. They all just go completely silent as soon as Ben walks up.
Yeah, to me, there's nowhere better to have a private strategy meeting excluding one person in your own alliance than the water well, and somewhere that everyone goes multiple times a day naturally just by themselves with no prior designs on anything like that. It seems like you could pick literally anywhere else to have that meeting.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, honestly, like the shelter is often a better bet than the water well.
Yeah, or even just like go out in the actual ocean or something. At least then people won't be able to overhear you. But this was just so, like, you could see Ben skulking in the background. But even if he didn't get interrupted, or even if he didn't interrupt them, I almost feel like you should expect someone to be in the vicinity, right? Like you should be using your indoor voices at least.
I always wonder, just physically, how big are these camps? Because I feel like back in the day, you always used to hear about like, oh, you've got to walk 2 miles to your water well or whatever. And now it seems like people are getting, it's kind of the same way on Game of Thrones. It used to take forever to get places, and now people can just get there in the span of 30 seconds. I wonder how much concern there ever is about not only people happening upon you just by process of, you know, there are only so many places you can be, but like what you just mentioned, people overhearing you, especially for people like Adam Klein, for instance, or I'm sure like if I ever went out there, I would be very worried about people just being close enough that they could hear me when there's nothing really getting in our way. Do you have any insight on how physically bigger or smaller these places are than they look? Have you heard anything?
How would I possibly have any?
I don't know. You know, random stuff. You went to Oxford.
Yeah, that's I took the model on how big random Fijian islands are, which is really suited me well to my career.
You're worldly.
Am I? I'm glad you have that impression, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious though. I wonder if the, because I know there's like a very explicit, this area is out of bounds, you can't go over here. I wonder if the survivor camps have gotten smaller is what I'm getting at. Like, I really wonder, and if that's like impacting things, because I really do think like having a really small camp would almost be like worse than being in the Big Brother house. Like, at least in the Big Brother house, you can close doors. But if you just have a small camp, it's hard to ever really get away in a place that people can't just come and see what's going on. So that would be, I guess, something that I would be interested in, but not even that much. And I'm sure the listeners are done being interested in it by now, too. So, Dom, I guess let's just get into the vote. We talked a bit already about how I really feel, and I think you agreed, that this Chrissy, Ryan, and Mike trio, I would be desperate to be voting with Ben here this round, with intentions of taking out one of the other three and then turning the table on Ben, turning the tables, plural, I guess, on Ben the following vote, along the same lines, I guess, that the I24 did really well with Jonathan Penner at the final nine. Like that exact same principle would come into play here where, okay, we have 4 out of 9. We pull one guy in for one vote and use him. We're down to 4 out of 8. And then everyone's mad at that guy and we're 4 out of 7. And we have majority the rest of the way. Do you feel like it's an indictment upon Ben, I suppose, or is it an indictment upon the other players? Like, who is the one playing so badly that this group didn't come together?
I'm going to have to put the blame on Ben. Like, it seems the past 2 weeks have been the story of how Ben was in this great position, and then I still don't know if he was pushed into this by Devin or if that's just how things played out, but he really seemed to squander every benefit that he had, and now he's in this very precarious spot where he... Like, you can applaud him for playing his idol correctly and idling out the person he wanted to target, and that's great. But going into next week, I imagine he's still the biggest threat in most people's minds. And
yeah.
It's so weird that, like, now Chrissy, Ryan, and Mike, in theory, should be able to seize control of the game. Like, if they just jam 3 votes on Ben, even if he realizes what's going on, he now has to go back to that group, make nice with them, and that now they have to tie and win the rock draw if it comes down to that. So I don't know. It feels like everyone is misplaying to some degree, but Ben more so than everyone else.
Right. The thing is, I'm really probably just gonna be blasting all parties involved here for Ben making them for it seems to me. I never got the impression that they were really considering it. I know you had the confusion about why Ryan was saying what he was saying, but to me that was always Ryan talking about what the message they had to be delivering was rather than their actual intentions. And for that, I feel like Ben probably is the one to blame because those three, I'm sure, were looking for any one out of those four to just hop on board with them. And then they have a pretty clear path to the final three. And even when Ben says, "I'm here for it, let's go," they seemed wholly unwilling. So, which I think is, again, still bad by them, especially when it's going to be so easy to potentially just use Ben for one vote and take him out next time. But certainly, I'm sure plenty of the fault lies with Ben that all 6 votes ended up coming his way at this tribal council. Dom, the only other thing that I have from the tribal council is Lauren and that idol getting thrown in the fire. I know there was a lot of speculation about why she didn't just reach in and get it. We saw Josh Wigler, of course, doing exit press every week on The Hollywood Reporter. I read his interview with Lauren, and she apparently says it didn't even cross her mind that she was just in such shock that she didn't think about it until long, long after the fact. And she doesn't even know if Jeff would have let her go in and get the idol. So it still seems like the answer is unclear. In your view, in that context where Lauren clearly gave Mike, she said, "Mike, you can have this half of the idol." If Mike then throws it in the fire and says no one's playing it, can she grab it or is that it?
It's at the risk of scooping yourself, it's worth a try, right? Like you may as well give it a go. So my understanding of the idol ownership rules is that when, and it's weird because we've never had this fractional idol, right, that's come into play in the same way, but my understanding is when Lauren gives half of it to Mike, both halves of that need to be in Lauren's possession for the idol to work. And so Mike now owns that half of the idol, and
right.
So technically if Lauren were to give him the string, I guess, or whatever the other half is, he would now own the full idol, and that would be his, so he could play it for himself or for anyone else. So when he then destroys his half, that's gone. That is no longer in play, and Lauren can't like bring it back into the game. It's like he's destroyed her Horcrux. It's
right.
Gone.
I completely agree with you. By the way, I think once she says, "Mike, here, this is your half," like that is officially her transferring ownership of it to him. She cannot get it back unless he transfers it back, and he's not transferring it back. He's throwing it in the fire.
There has to be some way that you can officially forfeit an idol, right? Outside of giving it to someone else, and I guess destroying it by putting it in the fire is a clear way of doing that. But
well, historically, that's what that's always the thing is they burn idol clues at blood versus water. They're like, "I don't want it. I'm going to put it in the fire." Like you can putting it in the fire is like a thing now on Survivor of destroying it.
I've always wondered. So at the merge feast in Gabon, where Marcus throws that idol into the ocean, if someone is frantically paddles out and tries to find it again, if they do, is that fair game or has that idol been taken out of play now?
No, that's fair game as far as I can tell. That's just the group throwing it into the ocean, but it's not them. It's not anyone taking possession of it and putting it. I truly believe that there is value in having a device within the game of Survivor like the fire, where people can publicly dispose of whatever they want to dispose of and it can't be retrieved, versus somewhere if you throw it in the ocean, you can go get it.
Yeah, so I think Lauren's hands were tied at that point. Of course, the way around it is to not give your idol to Mike in the first place. Still not quite sure why that happened. It didn't seem really necessary at all. Also not sure why Mike felt the need to throw it away. It's like, why show your hand like that? Especially if you know you're going to end up voting for Ben. Like, that seems so,
pointless to me. His plan is to have Lauren back at camp that night if things go according to his plan.
What if things, because you've already seen things turn around such that Lauren and Ben are going after each other after being one of the closest pairs in the game that ended up deciding that merge vote. What if things now turn around such that you and Lauren have to work together, and now the two of you having this idol might actually be the best thing for the two of you, but instead you've burnt that bridge for no reason? It really felt like Mike, based on that smug grin he had after he did it, he really just wanted to make this move that was good for TV, and it was. But it just seemed like that's clearly what he was doing. There was no real thought behind it.
I totally agree. It seems like I believe him when he says I've always wanted to do this, and that he just wanted to make kind of a scene, add some, you know, stir the pot a bit at that tribal council. And I do think there is some merit in the idea of, what are the odds that you're going to get back to camp and Lauren's going to say, okay, here's the other half of the idol, versus asking for that half back?
But maybe this is the official gameplay equivalent of hold up, bro. Like, this is the issue with casting superfans sometimes, is that they feel the need to just relive these prior moments. And so instead of getting this new and inventive gameplay, you get this kind of pastiche of previous moves that doesn't end up living up to the original.
Okay. I see what you're saying with that. Although I don't, do you feel like that's necessarily the worst thing in the world? Because people trying to outdo each other is how you get to the new heights.
Yeah, give me more of that. But I'm saying this is the failure mode of that, is when it just it seems like it's just like a poor retread of things we've seen before.
Okay, well, let me ask you, if you thought this was a poor retread, Devin getting up at tribal council and walking over to the other side, and then just chaos breaking out and everyone's getting up talking to everyone.
Well, that was definitely treading. I don't know if it was a retread or not.
Well, JT did that back at the Malcolm vote.
Yeah, thanks. It was ruining my joke.
Right.
That's fine.
Fuck off, Dom.
Okay. Well, as we discussed at the time, it feels like that genie is officially out of the bottle now. So it seems like this is fair game to just get up and walk around in the middle of tribal. And it seemed like it's, as soon as one person does that, everyone else now feels that freedom, even if they would never have considered doing that at any point before. So Devin gets up and does it, and now, as Ryan would say, pandemonium breaks out. Everyone's talking to everyone else. Although Ben and Lauren were remained there on their stumps. It's like they knew what the deal was. They knew it was one of the two of them, and that decision was in everyone else's hands. So there's not much point in them trying to get involved, because no one's going to let them. So it was interesting to see them just acknowledge what the situation was and play into it.
Yeah. Do you feel like this is going to be something? We've now had this happen two seasons in a row, and I'll grant you that they did get to see, I think actually that might have been the last episode they got to see, was the Malcolm boot episode where everyone got up and walked around. I feel like, to lead into the question, this might be something we start seeing basically every season. Do you feel like this is going to be a more recurring thing, or is this just a coincidence?
I guess when it happens for the first time in Game Changers, it's going to take a while for that to feed through into the general Survivor lexicon, I guess, in terms of what you're able and willing to do. I think starting with Ghost Island and future seasons, this might become the new standard. And I don't know if that's actually what the producers want. I think they want a tribal council where the viewers can have some idea of what's going on sometimes, and it's not always just this big clusterfuck of everyone talking constantly.
Yeah, it may get to the point where whether or not the group all disassembles becomes like a huge tell about whether or not someone's going to get blindsided. Like, if the group's not disassembling, someone's about to get some hurt feelings.
Yeah, you would have to like stage this big conversation at Tribal, this big like multi-way discussion in order to pull the wool over someone's eyes. Because otherwise, if that doesn't happen, they know what's coming.
Right, yeah. So that'll definitely be really interesting to track. And for the record, I'm here for it. I'm on board with people acting in their own best interest, whatever that means. And in this case, if they're getting up and talking more and wanting to make last minute decisions at Tribal Council, I'm all about that. And I do, although I agree with what you're saying, Dom, where I do feel bad, I guess, for the editors and producers, where it may lead to a lot of cases where it's hard to tell a coherent story about why things played out the way that they did, unless you spend half the episode at Tribal Council or whatever. Okay, so it finally occurred to me as these votes were being cast, Dom, of course Ben is just going to idle himself when he knows at least some are coming his way, and his target will definitely leave tonight. So I was wondering, as all of this was going down, oh my God, is Ben going to leave? And then remembered that he had that secret idol. Big shout out to Ben for keeping it secret. And as Jeff put it very beautifully at the end of the Tribal Council, he said, this was a Tribal Council where everything was out in the open, yet the one thing that had the most power was the only secret. And Dom, this is another big win for Team Keep It To Yourself when you find the idol. I'm a lifetime, a founding member of Team Keep It To Yourself, and it was a big night for us.
And I loved Ben's gumption and just saying that openly. Like, I think the lesson here, folks, is keep your idol to yourself, just before he was about to spring it. But Ben, as we've seen over the past few weeks, for all of his other faults, is a very natural showman and an actor.
Yeah, for sure. So that was very exciting. And the votes come in 6 on Ben, which did, like, I was expecting them to potentially flip and put a bunch of votes on Lauren, just because it seemed like such a clear move, but not going to happen. None of those votes for Ben count. Final vote, sadly, Queen Lauren, and that is the end of her run. And I was wondering in a lot of our previous podcasts how Lauren was going to leave the game, because it really never felt to me like people were like many people were ever coming for her, or that she'd be viewed as the biggest threat anytime soon. My speculation had been she would be potentially the victim of that final four twist where there's no vote and it's just a fire challenge for the people who don't get immunity and aren't taken by the immunity winner. I thought that might be where Lauren ended up coming up just short. Instead, she goes out here at final 7 by a vote of 1-0. What are your final takes here on Lauren? I'm going to optimistically say Lauren 1.0.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Lauren back again for sure. And I don't know when that's going to be. But I think you can see that Jeff was loving what she was putting out there. And and there's really no one else competing for that spot. There's no one else in that Lauren archetype that's going to be muscling her out in a few seasons' time. So, yeah, I think even if it takes a while for the next returning season to come around, she's got a place on it if Jeff has anything to say about it.
And to reference that interview that Josh did, she's all in for going back to play Survivor again. So that's really exciting that Lauren is interested in going back out there. Lauren, for me, over the course of this season, in a season where I got a lot of things wrong preseason, I still feel like Lauren was by far the biggest surprise for me in a totally positive way. I went from someone who I was thinking Lauren, as I said before, might have like a Deb Eaton experience on Survivor where she was regretting ever even going on the show in the first place. So thrilled to see that that was hilariously off base and that I'm an idiot as usual, and that Lauren is the queen we were promised and finally apparently deserved.
Yet another final round draft pick who is in serious contention to win for a large portion of the game. So let that be a lesson to us, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the late rounds of our drafts is where all the money is going to be distributed if you've been paying any attention. Devin was, I think, a relatively late pick. I believe I said about Devin, like, I think I might have said Devin was the bottom of my draft board, and that there was no conceivable timeline where I would have drafted him. And now it looks like he's in there looking really good as well. Dom, I guess any other thoughts on Lauren? Let's get it out there now. This is the one thing that we tend to be okay at predicting. How's Lauren 2.0 going to do if she does go back?
I I think for Lauren, more so than most people, it's really going to depend on the group that she's with. Which sounds like a non-answer, but you can imagine incarnations of that Hustlers tribe where Lauren actually is the first one out. But equally, if she is with some of these other like older, maybe more quiet people who jive with her personality, she could be in there with a serious shot to win again, and I would love to see that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying with that. I personally feel like while the sky is definitely the limit for Lauren on a potential second shot, I do worry that the element of surprise is probably a big piece of Lauren's winning game in the timeline where she does go on to win, is people not seeing her coming. And I do fear that, at least to some extent, the cat is out of the bag now. Maybe that'll be good for Lauren because people will know, I have a lot of concerns about her being an early boot, and now they've seen her be really great in challenges, and maybe that'll be less of a factor. But she's also going to have a much harder time, I think, sliding through under the radar in a lot of different timelines. But I guess to go back to what you said, Dom, I do think it depends a lot on the people that she ends up out there with. So that is Lauren on Healers, Heroes, Hustlers, may or may not be in that order. One final thing on Lauren, Dom, before I can't close the book just yet. Did she miss the opportunity to put an extra vote on someone else? Because she did have that extra vote in her pocket. Apparently that was a lie, and she just felt like she needed to be consistent and not use it. But did she miss the chance to use that extra vote, put it on Chrissy or anyone random, so that in the unlikely event that something weird goes down, at least she's not the only other name in the bucket?
I think you do that with your first vote, and if you feel the need to do that with your extra vote, you can do that with both. If you're concerned about an idol and someone else voting with Ben, or someone like casting a weird vote that goes somewhere else, then you could do that. But yeah, I'm surprised that no one did actually, because you it seems like you have these two well-defined sides both voting for Ben, and you don't want Ben's vote to be the one that decides what happens if it does come down to him. So I'm surprised we don't see, like, I don't know, Ryan voting for Devon, or Devon voting for Ryan, I guess. Like, you'd think that something like that would have taken place,
right? It does seem interesting, because I believe it's the first time, at least that I can think of, maybe Mike Holloway got to do this, where every single vote was canceled but theirs. Is this the only time that's happened?
Yeah, I think this actually is the first time. I'm sure, again, I don't know if we can get a live Twitter correction as we're doing this, but I'm sure someone will let us know.
Okay. Well, I think we're close enough to the end of the show that I'm not going to go for that this week, but hopefully we just got it right in the first place. Dom, that is going to actually finally do it now for Lauren here on season 35. Anything else that you want to get to from your notes or whatever else before we get into a little bit about the edit?
If I had notes, then maybe there would be, but since I don't, let's dive right into the edit zone.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken, Brad Culpepper. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone. Tune out now. Okay, so here we are now in the Edit Zone. And Dom, another really interesting week here in just the Ben and Devon saga of it all. I know last week you came in here finally starting to see a little bit of what others were seeing in Devon, and you were projecting him after sleeping on him all season long as like a 50-50 between him and Ben. Where are you on that now after this new episode where Ben spent the entire time on the outs?
I don't know, because I do you feel like this was a good episode for Devon as a Devon acolyte?
No, and I wish you would stop describing me that way, because I was a Devon stan, a Devon edit stan for like 4 days, and then went back to Ben. Like, I'm back on Ben now, and that continues this week.
Well, okay, follow up. Was this a good episode for Ben?
No, but it was. I don't think it was as nearly as bad as it could have been for Ben. Like, I do think while there's no way to avoid him being on the outs the whole time and having 6 votes come his way, and you have to show why that happens, and also show how he gets out of that. And I think all things considered, he looked really good. Like, he got the story told of how he got out of that much more so than the story was told why everyone was mad at Ben and he happened to just have an idol. I really do feel like it was a situation that was decidedly anti-Ben being spun in a decidedly pro-Ben manner.
The question with all of this for me is, how are you meant to view Chrissy? Because Chrissy is someone who, as the other players in the game have turned on her, I think the audience has started to turn on her too, or at least is meant to. And so when we see Chrissy go on this vendetta against Ben, I don't know if we're meant to go along with her for that ride. I think we're meant to side with Ben, and at least in terms of how the episode played out. Ben got the upper hand in that struggle, and from the preview next week, it looks like they might be working together once more. So, because if you take what Chrissy says at face value, which I am more than willing to do, the past few weeks have been okay. Ben is this tyrannical dictator who won't listen to anyone in his own alliance, and then Ben is someone who is just like insulting potential jurors on their way out the door, and who is being unnecessarily cruel to people. And this is painting a really bad picture of Ben, and yet it looks like they're going to end up working together. Ben's going to get the upper hand, and possibly if Ben can survive next week, then if Ben survives next week, then surely he should survive future weeks, right? Like, unless it comes down to him going on this immunity run, and maybe that ends.
How does he survive next week? He gets Chrissy and who? How is Ben getting four votes on his side potentially next week?
If he signs
Chrissy Ryan Mike,
Chrissy Ryan Mike, yeah, or maybe not even Mike. Maybe it's just Chrissy Ryan, or maybe it's Ryan and Mike. Who knows? But alternatively, let's say he goes back to Devon and Ashley, and they realize that if we let Ben go, then Chrissy, Ryan, Mike, if that is the three, can just pick us off. So we need to keep Ben. We need to force a tie or something in that vein. And then like Ben sticks around because of that.
Okay. So I'm going to put it out there now, Dom. I had been, you know, I made that bet about Ben and Chrissy very early into the season. And then ever since the merge, it's just been the Ben and Devon show in the edit zone. I've been trying to figure out how to kind of square that circle of feeling like all three of them could be in the finals together. And now after this week and seeing Lauren go down and seeing the game dynamics really just smashed back wide open, I still don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm so much more confident in the trifecta bet of Ben, Devon, and Chrissy being the three finalists. I would take that combination over the field combined.
Wow. Another bold call here from Colin.
I don't know how. I have no idea how those three are going to come together. Who's going to win immunity, take one, and then the other one's going to win a fire challenge. Like, I don't know how that's going to happen to come together. It still feels so overwhelming. Like, those are the three finalists.
If it's going to happen, I think it's because of this Final Four format is going to throw a wrench in things, where that person who should be the Final Four boot, by all accounts, ends up seeking their way in because they get that second lease on life.
Is that Ben, Devon, or Chrissy?
I don't know.
It could be any of them, right? Yeah, like, this is good. In defense of the people who spent the season saying, you know, it gets better near the end, it certainly is getting a lot better near the end. This end game has been a lot of fun, and I think it will continue to be that way. But so I'm looking at those three somehow being in there in the finals together, and I would be still strongly looking at the possibility of Chrissy breaking a tie between Ben and Devon. But that brings me back to what's going to happen to these other three. And to go back to this theory for the second week in a row, I spent all of last week, by the way, fake newsing people saying that this was going to be the week before the finale. We still have another one before the finale. I'm an idiot. It's only five people are going to make the finale. And I really do believe that they would want the episode before the finale to have some kind of big exciting boot, which to me means Ashley is not getting voted out this week. I think I'm looking at Ryan or Dr. Mike getting voted out this week.
I don't know if Ryan qualifies as an exciting boot anymore. Ryan has just been twisting in the wind for the past few weeks, and he gets these occasional confessionals. He still pops up from time to time, but he's not shown as this big player in the game anymore. So to me, I don't think he's in the mix there either. So unless this is, okay, we're taking a quiet week before the finale, and then that's when the real action happens. I think it almost has to be someone like Mike, who, if we think, like, to me, it seems if Mike makes the finals, he's going to win, despite all of his hilarious blunders within the game. Do you agree with me on that?
And I think we would also be on the same page that means Mike cannot make the finals.
Yeah, I really don't think he's being set up to win. So I think Mike has to go at some point. does it make sense for this to be the week? I don't know how this comes around on Mike, unless it is a Rock situation, but who knows?
That, yeah, it just logistically, like, it does make sense from like an edit department, like from his visibility level in that sense. But you're right that finding a way that Mike gets eliminated from the game, short of like a final six Rock draw, seems really tough.
Unless there's another idol goes back into play and that gets found and played, and Mike is the rebound for some reason.
How is Mike even going to be the rebound, though?
I don't know.
Unless it's tough.
I'm reaching here.
So maybe Ashley will get voted out. Maybe Ben or Devin will get voted out. Maybe Chrissy will get voted out. But I really am looking at those three being in there in the finals. And again, if we want to go back to the idea of that tie coming into play, I think it's Chrissy is the heavy front runner to be the one breaking a tie if it is the three of them in the finals. And after this week, I would, of course, be feeling like she's not too fond of Ben, at least based on what we just saw. But it wouldn't shock me if there was some sort of like Nayanka and Fabio kind of turnaround, or maybe like we've certainly seen it happen where people, when their nemesis makes it to the end, they're willing to vote for them.
Yeah, but that whole thing with Nayanka and Fabio, that was a one-sided feud. Like, that was just Nayanka randomly hating Fabio. That
true.
Was not reciprocated at all. Whereas this was like genuine animosity based on the history in the game over 31 days. So,
what I'm saying is, I would have thought if just based on this episode, of course she would break the tie against Ben. But I do think it's still very much in play that things change between now and then.
Yeah, it might be that there is still this respect or something, this thing that keeps bunding them back together, even as they keep squabbling, that would lead her to vote for Ben in the end. And that would be a cool resolution to their story arc of, you know, they're such great allies at the start, they end up having this rocky period in the middle, and then they're able to come back together. But it feels like any situation that we float as this final three, I don't see how it can happen. Like, it just doesn't seem likely. I'm curious where you think Ashley fits into all of this, because she had what for her I think was a big episode this week. And we, in particular, we hear her articulate the need for her to pad her resume, to make more moves so that when she is sitting in the end, she can beat the people that she's there with. And I know that some people are going so far as to say that Ashley is their winner pick, which is a very hot take. I still think that needs some time to cool down. But to me, it's not like ludicrously absurd the way it would have been a month ago.
Well, let's send this over to Brian Gold on Twitter, who tweeted at me. I tweeted up. Oh, actually, let's see what the results are at on that poll right now. I tweeted out a poll just asking who the general public thought was going to win. And I listed the choices of Ben, Devin, Chrissy, or someone else, because you can only have four choices. And I got this tweet from Brian Gold, of course, at bgold1711. He says, I actually think Ashley's going to win. The case for Ashley, we've seen her and heard from her almost every episode and know why she's doing things. She can win immunities. She seems well-liked. And given biases, I think Ben and Devin would get voted out before her. Against Mike, Chrissy, and or Ryan, she probably wins. And Dom, this is something we've talked about in previous edit zones, is the idea that if there was super under the radar, probably unlike anything we've seen since maybe, would Sophie Clark count as someone who fit into this mold, that Ashley could be that type?
So to respond to those specific arguments, first of all, given biases, you would also expect those Ben and Devin types to win over Ashley in the end, even if they had played fairly similar games. Secondly, we have not heard from her in every episode. We were joking a few weeks ago about her invisibility, that you never hear from Ashley. And there was a solid 4 or 5 week stretch where I don't know how many confessionals she got, but you were never really hearing from Ashley. There was no great personal insight about what was going on. She was just there along with JP, basically. Thirdly, I think if she were to win, we would have heard something from her about that JP relationship, which was the only real content that Ashley got at any point in those first few episodes. And then that just disappeared. And then when they end up turning on JP, we hear nothing from her about why that had to happen.
I agree.
I'm
with you. I'm not with Brian. Sorry, Brian. I think Ashley is out of it for me. Although, like, I do remember saying back in the very early episodes, like, Ashley's there more than Dom in particular is realizing. And like, if I did have like a 3% candidate, it would be Ashley. That was 2 months ago. I think that's out the window at this point.
But do you see Ashley as a possible final three contender? Because I certainly do. I think she's starting to get that late development that, like, realizing that she's a losing finalist, they feel the need to pad her edit somewhat so that people actually know who she is by the time she gets there.
I do think that, although I also feel like we could be seeing just a more developed version of someone who just goes out early in the finale that used to get nothing and now just gets a little.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I could see that too.
Okay. Well, I want you to guess who you think the public, or you're going to cheat. So I'm going to just tell you, who do you think the public's favorite is right now to win?
Well, not that you're going to care what I think, but I'm going to say Devin.
Okay. I thought Ben would be the front runner in this poll.
Can I retract my answer? I think it's a tie. I think your poll, like all of your polls, is going to end in a tie.
It's certainly going to end in a tie, but in its current state, there have been 592 votes. There are 9 hours left to vote, so it could change. Right now, leading the pack, Devin with 43%. It was tied this morning. Ben is now down to 35%. The morning crew, big Devin believers, it turns out. The early birds like Devin. I posted this poll at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So the late night crowd was all in on Ben. The early people believing in Devin. Chrissy's still coming down with 12%, and the field getting 10%. So Devin, an 8-point favorite here over Ben, as far as my Twitter followers are concerned. Any insight or any takes about how that sounds?
That doesn't surprise me too much. Where are the other candidates? Is there anyone making a case for Mike? Is there a Ryan fanboy still out there?
I got Brian aforementioned making the case for Ashley. I think I got someone making the case for Mike, but I do not remember who that was, and I can't find them now very quickly.
Are there any Ryan truthers out there?
No Ryan believers, to my knowledge, but I thought that was interesting that it's still looking pretty tight there between Devin and Ben. And while I'm strongly leaning Ben personally, it does seem like most people are, the plurality of people are leaning Devin at this point.
And then Chrissy got how much?
12%.
All right. And then I guess other encompasses the rest. But of those, I imagine Ashley is in like the 4 to 5, I would wager.
I would say it would probably be like 5% Ashley, 5% Mike, very little percent Ryan.
What do you think Ryan's ultimate fate is going to be? Because I almost stand by my claim that he's not going to make it to the end, even though he probably should. I think at this point, Ryan might be the ideal goat for some people to take with them. But where do you think he's going to end up? Is he just going to be this final five or final four boot? Because he's made it remarkably far in the game for someone who has really had no agency for the past few weeks.
I agree. And maybe he, by that logic, should be the front runner to be the person who just like loses the fire challenge, because otherwise, how would he not just make it to the end? I think you're right that people are not probably viewing him as a big threat. And I think that's probably mostly correct. And in a spot where people are probably starting to really hammer home, okay, I need to be there against people I can beat, I think Ryan is probably looking pretty tempting at this point. Like, maybe what the situation is Ben flips over with Chrissy and Ryan and wants to go to the end with them, and they all feel like that's a potentially winning trio for them. And then Devin goes on some run and also wins the fire challenge or whatever and sneaks into the finals. That actually would make sense to me. So I guess in that timeline, I guess Ryan would have to be the one who goes out in fourth place. If like Ben wins immunity and takes Chrissy, and then it's Devin and Ryan showing down in a fire challenge. Okay, Dom, anything else that you want to get to this week?
No, I think I'm all good for the week.
All right. And of course, we forgot to plug before the edit zone, but we can do it now. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us domandcolin@gmail.com. All right. So that's going to do it. We will talk to you guys very soon. I guess until then, take care, everybody.